This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.
This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Hello and welcome to Sports Talk here on WKAR AM 870. I am Matt Ludke sitting in the Iron Throne. I've got Alex Shark in the booth. We have tons to talk about today. Round two of the Masters is going on as we speak. We'll talk a little bit about the Tigers winning yesterday, redeeming themselves for the blown 6-1 lead the day before. We'll look at a couple of intriguing NFL draft prospects, and we have to examine Yale's unexpected run to the NCAA final in college hockey. But first and foremost, I think we got to lead with this. The Lions, in their search for a replacement for the legend Jason Hansen, have signed Norwegian former amateur soccer player Harvard Rugland. Now, he's interesting because he has a 4-minute YouTube clip called Kickalicious, and that is his nickname, Kickalicious, and it is probably the most impressive collection of trick shot kicking that I have ever seen. I don't know if I've seen too many of those types of videos, but wow, this guy, I mean, he's just like casually kicking 60 yarders, 50 yarders, 40 yarders, and then he kind of ups the ante and he's kicking the ball into a basketball hoop that's on the other side of the uprights. He's got a gentleman catching the ball and he's far up on a high bridge and he kicks it all the way up to him, lands right in his hands. He's got a guy who's on a boat riding in the water and, you know, he's clearly moving and he just hits him right in stride. It's amazing. Now, you know, when you look at it, you know, and we sign a YouTube sensation. Now, it looks like maybe we're just kind of pushing David Akers, who we also just looked at and signed the other day. And David Akers is 38. He's had some ups and downs in his career. Just as recently as 2 years ago, he was probably the premier kicker in the NFL. I mean, he definitely helped San Francisco have that first great season before last year. And then last year, you know, the wheels kind of fell off. And a kicker is a lot like a closer in baseball, where it's kind of, what have you done for me lately? And it's all mental. And I, you know, as much as I hated the prospect of us taking a guy like Ziggy Ansah, who isn't all that experienced in American football and American culture in general outside of Utah, I think Harvard Rugland would be an awesome pickup. And I think at the very least, he's gonna bring some fans to the stands. I mean, just to see him warming up. Who knows what he's going to do to warm up? I mean, this guy is hitting him from all different angles in the video. If you haven't seen it, go for it. It's 4 minutes that you won't regret. The guy is insane. Alex, have you seen any of it? Are you watching it right now in the booth?
Yeah, it's funny. I'm watching it right now. And the question is, you said that they're going to get some fans in the seats with this guy.
Right.
Well, if he's only there for warm-ups, then maybe he replaces the guy who usually sings the halftime. What is it? Go Lions, go for victory.
Right, forward down the field.
Forward down the field.
All that jazz.
I mean, is he the new entertainment for the Lions, or is this guy a legitimate kicker?
I mean, I think that's the worst case scenario. But I mean, you look at him; he's 6'2", 240. He's built a little bit like he's like a mini Sebastian Janikowski, the Polish Rocket over in Oakland, and you know. The big question is, when you get these videos on YouTube, is, you know, yeah, we're seeing all these makes, but how many times did he miss the kicks in between? But when you look at some of the things that he's doing with the accuracy, and I mean, I'm not scared to spoil it, because even if I say it, it doesn't do it justice, but he has the end of the clip. I mean, he punts one ball and then steps up and kicks one off a tee, and it's like he's skeet shooting. I mean, he hits the ball with the other ball. He hits the punted ball with the place kicked ball, and it's just right on the money. I mean, if you have a guy who has that kind of accuracy, even outside of the game, you know, with no defense lined up, no pressure in the stands, I mean, that's still a ridiculously difficult thing to do. And you think, you know, all these guys do all day is just kick, and you know, that pretty much is the extent of their job. But at the same time, I mean, a talent like that is pretty rare. And granted, you know, he's only been kicking since 2011. Kicking American footballs, which obviously are pretty different than a soccer ball. So you gotta admit that the guy has promise. And when you look at it, I mean, David Akers is 38. Harvard here is 28. So maybe I mean, here's an idea. Maybe I know it would be kind of awful to waste two roster spots on kickers, but maybe you take Akers for a year. You know, he probably doesn't have a lot left in the tank. Granted, kickers can kick until they're like 800 years old, but if you know, if you have a guy who can maybe learn the game a little bit from Akers, who's a veteran to say the least, and then you kind of hand over the reins to him, and then we have, you know, maybe a decade of Harvard Ruglund as our kicker. And I mean, you look, and if you want a guy who is going to be cool under pressure and kind of block out all that stuff, I feel like a soccer style kicker and a Scandinavian kicker at that is probably one of your best bets. I feel like they're, you know, a very even keeled kind of people, and I think he might be a good fit. I think, granted, he brings a little bit of the extra hoopla, but it's not for, you know, terrible reasons. You know, he's not in trouble with the law like Amari Spivey is right now. You know, we've had enough of those stories. Why not get a story like this where it's just something fun and clearly, you know, entertaining, to say the least? I mean, I'd certainly go to a Lions practice and watch this guy kick. I mean, some of the stuff he's doing is incredible. And it reminds me, you know, they used to have in the Pro Bowl, in that week leading up to it, they'd have all sorts of weird skills competitions, and they used to have kickers play horse. You know, this guy isn't even in the NFL yet, but I'd already probably be throwing my money down on him. I mean, some of the shots he makes or kicks he makes in the video are pretty darn impressive. So if you have a guy who has that kind of accuracy, I feel like taking a flyer on him is not going to hurt. I mean, he's a kicker anyway, so it's not like we're going to sign him to a huge deal and, you know, have a huge cap number on him. He's a kicker, so he's going to get a couple $100,000, and, you know, I don't think it's a terribly terribly bad decision. And, you know, one thing you could say is the Jets worked him out recently and didn't sign him, and if the Jets pass on someone, maybe that's a bad sign. But at the same time, hey, we need a kicker. Jason Hansen was a legacy. You know, his legacy will live on, I think. And I would love to go in a new direction and try something different and take a risk. And I think when you're taking a risk with a kicker, I think it's a little bit safer than, say, a franchise quarterback. You know, I don't see the harm in it. I know it might get a little flack from other franchises, but I think it's a good move. I don't think it can hurt. And, you know, who knows? Maybe we find the next sensation and he is our kicker for 10 years. Let us know what you think. 517-355-9527 or toll free at 877-952-7870. And Alex, do you think he has a legit shot? I mean, I know it's early, obviously. We haven't even gotten into like the summer camps, but do you think this guy has a chance to make a roster and make our roster?
Yeah, and that's the key word, is he has a shot to make the team. I mean, we haven't really signed this guy permanently, but maybe the listeners have another take on it.
Yeah, it's true. You know, and it could definitely go either way, and I see both sides to the coin there, but, you know, as long as he's making kicks in practice, and it's not like we're just going to throw him out there for game winners week one, you know, right out of the gate, you know, he'll get a chance to develop a little bit, and I think it's harmless, and I'm excited to see him in a Lions uniform. I'd love to see him in the Honolulu blue. Looks like we have a caller here. Go ahead, caller.
My name's Jeff. Thanks for having me on. I just I think it's a great idea for the very reasons you mentioned, to bring in more interest in the from the fans. And who knows? He might just turn out to be a good NFL kicker.
No, I hear you, Jeff. And, you know, it's not a huge risk, again, because he's a kicker. And any kind of positive off-the-field stuff, I think the Lions should try and get as much of that as they can. I mean, we've seen the negative side of off-the-field antics, so to speak. And I think, you know, Sue's appearance on Splash aside, we haven't had a lot of good off-the-field news. So I think a guy like this who generates some excitement, you know, how many times can you say that you're a viral video star and that's how you get to the NFL? It's a great story, regardless of whether he sticks to the roster or not.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's a good move.
Well, all right.
See what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much, Jeff, for your call.
Thank you.
And, yeah, you know, I think you know, we've, again, seen all these negative stories. It'll be nice to see a good one. Because, you know, even if he doesn't start or, you know, he isn't our kicker, you know, at every opportunity, Fox or CBS or whatever network they're on, they're going to be talking about it during the breaks. You know, they'll be, I'm sure of it, at least in the preseason, definitely in the preseason. They'll show clips from the video. I can almost guarantee it, because that's the kind of thing that generates interest from, you know, not just your diehard football fans. That's the kind of thing that would bring the casual fan in. And, you know, we definitely need those kind of stories in Detroit, and especially with the Lions. So I think, you know, as far as a PR move, it's great. And if it turns out to be a great move in terms of, you know, player personnel, you know, even better. You know, that's a double whammy in favor of the Lions, because, you know, teams have obviously taken a look at him, the Jets among them, like I mentioned before. But, you know, if we get our hands on him before anybody else does and he turns out to be a gem, then we look like absolute geniuses. If it doesn't pan out, then, yeah, you know, we took a shot. We took a flyer on a YouTube sensation, and it didn't work out because, you know, that's what most people expected. So, you know, I think it's a great move, and I'm excited to see him in the Honolulu Blue. And, you know, you can take a look at other guys who've kind of been getting headlines lately, and you look at players like Tyrann Mathieu from LSU, well, formerly of LSU. There was a story that came out. He stopped counting at 10 failed drug tests in college. And, like, that is the kind of player that either would end up a Raider or a Lion, I feel like. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that we need to steer clear of. If a guy has a harmless YouTube, you know, he's a harmless YouTube sensation, snatch him up. You know, why not? Take a flyer. But guys like this who have baggage, serious baggage, I don't think being a YouTube sensation is negative baggage at all. And I don't see the problem with signing him. I'm very excited. I hope he pushes David Akers, and I would not mind seeing him getting the starting nod. So we'll see how that plays out. Give us a call, 517-355-9527, or toll free at 877-952-7870. We'll take a quick break now. We'll come back with more. We'll talk about Yale again, the Tigers, maybe a little of Jackie Robinson about the 42 movie coming out. So yeah, stay tuned to Sports Talk here on WKAR AM 870.
Talk of the Nation provides you with the day's news and more, the experiences and opinions of people around the country and around the world. I'm Neil Conan. When you're looking for the latest news and how it affects you, your family, your neighbors, and your life, turn to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
That's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 p.m. right here on AM 870.
Good afternoon, I'm Scott Pohl, and here's the weather. Today will be cloudy and we could get some rain. The high will be 43. Cloudy with a good chance of rain and possibly mixed with snow tonight. The low in the low 30s. Tomorrow, cloudy and windy, a good chance of rain and snow. The high 42. Sunday, partly sunny. The high 55.
Hello and welcome back to Sports Talk here on WKAR AM 870. Matt Ludke here, Alex Sharg in the booth, and believe it or not, I think we're about to discuss a little hockey. And I know I haven't done that as much as the other sports, just because that second NHL lockout in, you know, 7 years or whatever has really hurt my interest in the sport. But we'll move over to college hockey first, and Yale. I think the Cinderella story in the college hockey world. They beat UMass Lowell to advance to the championship game of the Frozen Four over in Pittsburgh. They're going to play Quinnipiac, who is also from the state of Connecticut. Apparently, they are 10 miles apart. I did not know that. This is basically like Duke and Carolina in basketball playing for a title. So the state of Connecticut will be split, I am sure, and that'll be interesting to see. Now, my question to you, Alex, and to the viewers: when you look at this Yale hockey run and you compare it to, say, Harvard basketball upsetting New Mexico in the tournament the other week, now, which one is a better bit of PR for the school? Obviously, these are Ivy League schools, so it's not like they're hurting for you know, admittance and people to turn down from their school. So I don't know if that's the main draw, but in terms of just like exposure for the school, what is better, a one-round run in the NCAA basketball tournament or run straight to the finals and potentially winning the whole thing in college hockey? Alex, go ahead.
It's a good question. I mean, I just don't think that it's comparable because they're two different sports. I mean,
right,
you compare college hockey and basketball, momentum changes. You know, March Madness in basketball, I think, is a lot. If you're a smaller school in March Madness basketball and you make a run, I think that's more impactful than a team going to the championship in hockey, because a championship's a championship. And if you're comparing a smaller team, you know, in a D1 or even a D2, that's, you know, a lot harder to do.
Right. And I mean, really, you just look at like a Florida Gulf Coast. I mean, no one knew where that school was. No one knew that school existed. And I apologize if you do, you know, but mostly, as a general thought, most people did not know that Florida Gulf Coast existed, or definitely they didn't think they were going to beat Georgetown. So they have this magical run to the Sweet 16, and it put their school on the map. You know, it is the best advertising that a school could have. And then you follow it up with the fact that the dorm's there on the beach. And I feel like that's going to generate a whole bunch of interest from young people all around the country. And I think, you know, obviously when you compare college basketball to college hockey, you know, it's frozen apples to oversized oranges. You know, it's not the same scale. But just the fact that college basketball is such a huge, huge event, and March Madness specifically is such, you know, it captures the attention of the nation, and that's not an exaggeration, whereas college hockey kind of operates under the radar. I mean, this is really the first story of the college hockey tournament that I think has really broken into a national story. So I think if Yale hangs on and wins the title, I think maybe that is bigger than Harvard's one win. But as it stands, I think maybe like if Yale just runs to this final game and they lose, you know, I don't think people are going to always be remembering that Yale run, where I think as far as Harvard students go, I feel like they can always look back and see that win over New Mexico. And you know, that was a big moment for the program. I know it was a big moment for Tommy Amaker. So, you know, I think they definitely helped themselves there. Callers, let us know what you think. 517-355-9527 or toll free 877-952-7870. What would you rather have, a college basketball upset, a Cinderella story, or an incredible run to the college hockey final? And when you look at basketball, I mean, Cornell had a run recently. So it's not like it's impossible for an Ivy League school to advance in the tournament. But I don't feel like you see Yale in the college hockey final every year. You know, I feel like it's usually BC or BU. Or I know there's a lot of teams in the Northeast that are very competitive. But, I mean, you look at Yale's run and they beat Minnesota. And I feel like Minnesota would be like if Harvard had beaten, you know, a one seed in their tournament. Because when you look at the college hockey tournament, obviously there's only 16 teams, so it's a much smaller scale in terms of teams you're playing, and you know, the difference between the top teams and the lower teams is, it's going to be a little bit closer in terms of talent level and skill level. But I think regardless of what Yale does, it's a great story, and you know, hats off to them for making a run. But at the end of the day, I think just the sheer impact that college basketball has on the sporting world will carry that to be the bigger story. So congrats to Yale. Best of luck against Quinnipiac. I'm not sure who I want to win in that game. Either way, it'll be news. So best of luck to them both. And let's change gears a little bit. Let's talk about the Masters. We're in the middle of round two as we speak down at Augusta National. And the big story yesterday, aside from, you know, the leaders and the leaderboard, this 14-year-old from China, Tianlong Wan, he shot a 73 in round one. He's a 14-year-old from China, and this puts it in perspective and is kind of sad. He was 6 years old when Tiger last won the Masters in 2005. He was six. Whenever you can say that someone was, you know, in single digits in age the last time Tiger Woods won something, I mean, that 2005 is not that long ago. 6 years old, and now he is playing in the Masters and, you know, kind of playing well. You know, he's clearly, you know, he's not going to win the tournament. But anytime you have a 14-year-old who doesn't just totally bomb off the stage the first day, I think the story builds and maybe the momentum builds, and it'll be interesting to see what he does today. Right now, I believe we still have Mark Leishman in the lead. He's tied with Dustin Johnson at 6 under. So, you know, clearly it's anybody's game. Tiger Woods is falling back. Alex, do you have a spot where Tiger Woods is right now?
Well, I think the way that this 14-year-old's playing, Tiger Woods may fall right in line with him. I mean, shooting 1 under, wow. 14 years old.
When I was 14 years old, my golf scores were triple digits easy, and I still can't dream of shooting a 73 anywhere, even if it's like a par 3 course. I still don't know if I would be able to crack a 73. So hats off to young Tianlang Wan, and I am sorry about that name. I'll figure it out. I've heard it pronounced about 5 different ways. Tirico pronounced it differently than the guys from Sports Illustrated did, so nobody knows. I think we'll have to have him say it repeatedly to figure out what's going on. But, best of luck to him, and it's a great story. And how awesome would it be if Tiger and him ended up in the same group going into the weekend, granted if he makes the cut. So we'll see where that goes, and either way, it should be interesting. I'm excited to see it, and it's just a great story. You love hearing it, and I remember, Michelle Wee, when she broke on as, a young star, and now it's been, she's old hat now. Geez, she's got to be in her 20s. You see these kids that come out so young and make such a big impact. I think it's great for him, and I hope he can keep it up and start the, building an upward trajectory here. So callers, let us know what you think. 517-355-9527. Toll free at 877-952-7870. Now, where does shooting a 73 in round one at the Masters rank in terms of amazing things that a 14-year-old has done? I think it's pretty high up there. Definitely more than I would be capable of at 14. So hats off to Tianlang. And you obviously, everything changes in the Masters over the weekend anyway, but at this point it's great that we have a story like this that continues to kind of build itself up and keep going, and hats off to him. Great job, best of luck, and I'm excited to see where he goes and what he does in the future of golf, because you look at it and hey, he might be the future of golf. 14 years old, gosh, that is crazy. Now, we should switch gears again here, because obviously you can't talk too much about the Masters at this point. There's a lot of golf left to be played. But we'll get back to the Lions here. And in addition to signing Kikalicious, there's been some news about who they're going to draft. We've got some mock drafts that have come out recently from guys like Mel Kiper and Todd McShay, and Mel Kiper's hair as well. So you look at these, and every draft, the top five is relatively the same. Both guys have Kansas City taking Luke Jackal out of Texas A&M. Kiper has Ziggy Ansah, who we talked about yesterday at length, going to Jacksonville at number two. So, we discussed maybe he wouldn't be a good fit for the Lions. Well, he might not even fall that far to get there. McShay has Deion Jordan from Oregon going to Jacksonville, and then Ziggy Ansah going to Oakland. And man, again, you talk about Ziggy being a bad fit in Detroit. Man, he might be an even worse fit in Oakland. I don't know. You talk about a culture shock. You go from the nice area, Provo, Utah at BYU, and then you go right into, the black hole that is Oakland and that Raiders organization. So that'll be an interesting thing to watch and, an interesting development. Sharif Floyd is who Mel Kiper has Oakland taking. I think that might be a little more in line. And when you get to that Lions pick at 5, McShay has us taking Eric Fisher, the tackle out of Central Michigan, and then Kiper has us taking D. Milliner, the corner from Alabama. And obviously, I said yesterday I would prefer Milliner just because it's been so long since we've had a top-flight corner. And when you look at the pieces we've kind of put together in the defensive backfield, maybe one more big piece would kind of put that group over the top and change it from, a perennial weakness. And, gosh, we're the team that made Matt Flynn tens of millions of dollars in one game because they were so beyond horrible. a few years ago against Green Bay. So, you know, you look at a team like that where we are historically bad in one specific area, you know, even though the defensive line was supposed to kind of, you know, assuage those problems and kind of cover up the weaknesses in the defensive backfield, I think we've learned over the last few years that it's not that simple, and teams are figuring out ways to beat us regardless of, you know, the kind of players we have on the front lines. So I think, you know, you got to shore up that back seven, and the best way to do that is to draft the top flight corner in the draft. And granted, you know, he's been up and down on draft boards. I think he's a relatively safe pick just because, you know, you take a guy from Alabama, he knows how to play, he knows how to handle himself. He should be, you know, well acclimated to the league relatively early on just because it seems like Alabama is like a minor league team anyway. I think they're probably, it's like, you know, the rest of the NCAA and then Alabama and then the NFL. It's like that stepping stone between them. So I think anytime you get a guy who played for the Crimson Tide, he probably knows what he's doing and has a relatively good football head on his shoulders. Alex, who do you think the Lions draft here? Now, you know, we've seen Fisher, we've seen Milliner, we've seen, you know, tons of other tackles mentioned. Who do you want them to draft and who do you think they will?
Well, they signed Mosley, they signed Thomas, you know, holding over the defensive end mm-hmm. and the defensive line. Mm-hmm. I think getting Ansa or any of those, you know, potential, maybe leaning a little bit to get some of these defensive linemen to fill the Cliff Avril void. I don't think they're going to do it.
Right.
If you look at who's the best player on the board, it's Dee Milliner. And I think that the way the Lions have drafted the last 3 years, they go with the best player on the board. So I think it's going to be Milliner.
That's very true. You know, and regardless of position, because, you know, back when we had Sue, we drafted fairly the next year and people kind of scratched their heads. But at the same time, now that you look at it, maybe it wasn't that bad of a pick because we kind of need both of them in the middle there. You know, and if they can both kind of put it together at the same time, man, that's a scary interior of your D. And yeah, that is a great point. They do tend to draft the best player available, even if that means, you know, reaching and drafting a guy that most other people have concerns about, whether it's a job at best with his concussion concerns, which of course came back to haunt us, or, you know, Nick Fairley's off the field troubles, which again came back to haunt us. So it seems like guys with red flags, as long as they're talented, we don't particularly care. And I don't know if the recent events have kind of changed the Lions organization's tune. I think it was clear that upper management and the owners, you know, the Ford family, they weren't very happy with all this bad PR. So maybe they kind of steer clear of guys who have red flags. You know, granted, now that I say that, they're going to go out and draft the Honey Badger. But, you know, barring that, I think, you know, any of these guys mentioned in the top five, I think are good bets. You know, it isn't, you know, cited as one of these drafts where there is a full-fledged top flight star at the top of the draft. And I think it kind of is a blessing that they're picking fifth, you know, because by the time they get to that fifth pick, it's not like everyone there is going to be available. I think, you know, you're going to see your options kind of slim down. And if Milliner's there, great. If he's not, I mean, Fisher will likely be there. You know, everything kind of hinges on whether or not Geno Smith gets picked in that top four. It's possible, you know, Philly's looked at him, although they've signed people and Arizona looked at him and they signed a guy. And it just seems like all these teams are kind of scared of Geno Smith. But if he does end up going in the top four, or, you know, maybe somebody trades up to get a pick in the top four, then someone good will fall to the Lions. I think it's kind of a similar thing you've seen with the Pistons the last few years, where they're not the worst team in the league, but they're definitely, you know, kind of in the cellar. And it just so happens that, you know, a great player falls to them. And I think that's what they're hoping for. And at five, you know, that's a great spot to do it. It's relatively safe. You know, the way the rookie deals are restructured, you know, it's not going to be a tremendous hit to our cap room. I like Milliner just because, again, we haven't had a DB worth talking about since Dre Bly. And that was before Dre Bly even talked or played as a Lion. I think we were more excited about him before he got on the field than after. But, you know, either way, it'll be nice to get excited about a defensive back again. So give us a call. Let us know what you think, who the Lions should draft, 517-355-9527, or toll free at 877-952-7870. And, you know, the draft this year, it's kind of, you know, it's short on stars, but I think it's deep. You know, I think there's plenty of guys, especially on the defensive lines, who we can pick up in later rounds. You know, you look at a guy like, you know, I'll say it, a Golston. He's, you know, his draft grades have, you know, certainly not been to the level that I think he was hoping for when he came out. And I'm not saying, you know, he might be regretting that decision. I think, you know, he made it and he's fine with it. But at the same time, he's the type of guy that, you know, if he's available in the fifth round, what kind of defensive lineman are we going to be able to get in the second and third rounds? I think, you know, the overall depth there in the trenches is so high this year that I don't know if you need to reach for, you know, that top flight, albeit, you know, projected top flight defensive end. Because, I mean, Ziggy Ansah, he only had 4.5 sacks last year. And he is a top five pick, you know, as high as 2 there to Jacksonville. So it seems like guys are really projecting production at the next level for him. And if you're going to reach with that top pick for a guy like that, when you can get a guy who maybe isn't as highly touted but might be just as productive later in the draft for much less money, I think you make a move like that. But when you look at top flight corners, they don't come around very often. And it seems like when teams get them, they lock them up for as long as possible. I mean, you know, the Champ Bailey trade aside, I don't feel like you see a lot of elite corners getting traded or let go, or, you know, unless it's a contract dispute or something, I don't think you see teams letting those guys go. Whereas, you know, you look at the Lions and Cliff Averill was our pass rush specialist and he's gone. And it doesn't seem like we're missing him terribly. You know, we signed Jason Jones and you know, we make a few moves to replace his production. But it didn't seem like the Lions as an organization were panicking when Cliff Averill left. So I feel like you can hopefully develop some speed rushers. We've been waiting for Willie Young to come on since he got drafted. You know, he certainly looks the part, but it, you know, the production just isn't there yet. So, you know, we've got guys in place that might be able to get some production there. But I think when you look at corners, we haven't had any worth talking about in forever. So I think we go with Milner. I'm hoping we go with Milner. But again, now that I say that, we'll go with Fisher and then take Honey Badger in the second round. So we'll see. The draft can't get here soon enough, especially with basketball being over. We're kind of in a dead period where baseball, it's too cold to really care about baseball at this point, as Tiger fans showed the other day. 35 and rainy, not great baseball weather, but yeah, the draft is coming soon. Can't get here soon enough. Very excited to get back into the football mindset, so we'll keep our tabs on that, because you know the mock drafts change pretty much every hour on the hour with the new breaking news, or, you know, someone said this, so their draft stock is going to plummet, all that kinds of stuff. So we'll keep our tabs on that. It looks like we'll take a quick break here. We'll be right back after these messages here on Sports Talk AM 870 WKAR.
Daniel Handler, a.k.a. Lemony Snicket, the author of the comic gothic novels A Series of Unfortunate Events, has a new children's book. On the next Fresh Air, Handler talks with us and plays a couple of Snicket songs on his accordion.
So I like to say that I'm one of the few people in the history of the world to take up the accordion basically in order to meet women.
Join us.
That's Fresh Air coming up at 3 p.m. right here on AM 870 WKAR Radio.
There's a chance of rain in the forecast. Cloudy today, the high in the low 40s. Tonight, cloudy and maybe some rain mixed with some snow, the low 33. Tomorrow, cloudy and windy, a good chance of rain and snow, the high Saturday 42. Partly sunny with a high in the mid-50s on Sunday. I'm Scott Pohl.
Welcome back. Sports Talk here on WKAR AM 870. Matt Ludke here, Alex Shark in the booth, and let's get back to hockey here, and this time we're going to look at the NHL. Now, the Red Wings are currently in talks with Jimmy Howard, and apparently very close to signing Jimmy Howard to a 6-year deal that would more than double his annual salary. Now, you know, Jimmy Howard has arguably been our best player this season. He's 16-12-4 with a 2.41 goals against average and a 9.17 save percentage. Where do you see this as far as, you know, importance? Because he's in the last year of his deal, and you know that whenever players are in the last year of their deal, either they're playing for a contract and, you know, they're working their tails off, and you see guys in the NBA have career years all the time in that contract year, or you see it kind of work against a guy where he's maybe wondering, why aren't they signing me yet? You know, do I have a long-term future here? Is it worth giving my all right now to stay here? But when you look at Howard, he's been in the Red Wings organization since he came into the league. I think it's a good move to lock him up. He's young. I believe he's 29. And again, he's been here since he started. He was a 2003 second round pick, and he has been groomed in Grand Rapids, you know, all the way up to the Red Wings organization. And it's nice when you see quotes, you know, I want to be here. I get along great with everyone here, and I believe in this organization, and I want to get the job done. Those are the kinds of things you want from a potential franchise player. And I know, you know, the Red Wings certainly have several other stars, but I think Jimmy Howard maybe is a blossoming star. And I think anytime you can lock up a goalie like that, granted, goalies are such a weird position in the NHL in terms of what have you done for me lately kind of stuff. But I think locking up Jimmy Howard, nothing wrong with that. I love it when we have consistency in goal. You know, I was a huge Chris Osgood fan growing up, and I was heartbroken when we let him go and so happy when he came back. So I think it's nice to kind of maybe lock him up, maybe make him a Red Wing for his career. And I think there's no harm in it. And I'm hoping that they can, you know, get this deal done sooner rather than later. Because as I mentioned, when things drag out, especially when it's contract negotiations, you know, things can go sour in a hurry, both, you know, with on-ice production and off. And granted, that might be, you know, a little more skewed towards other sports. Hockey players are usually pretty... you know, they put their job first and the contract negotiations second. So you see other sports kind of maybe struggle with it, but hockey's a little bit different of a beast just because, you know, it's hockey. There's serious honor in hockey. So I hope they snag him up, and I think it's a good move. Alex and callers, let us know what you think. Jimmy Howard, are you comfortable locking him up long term, or do you want to make a run at some sort of, you know, free agent goalie on the horizon? Let us know, 517-355-9527 or toll free at 877-952-7870. And again, you know, goalies in hockey, it's such a weird up and down position. Again, you know, it's similar to that closer role in baseball or the kicker role in football, where it is, what have you done for me lately? And, you know, in an instant, your confidence can be lost and the production on the field or ice or court, whatever, what have you, you know, it drops in quickly. You know, things can definitely turn on a dime when you're a goalie. And we've seen, you know, several instances where guys who are considered the franchise goalie get pulled in favor of their backups. And then, you know, their backups come in and end up playing much, much better than they did. I mean, I feel like it happens to Roberto Luongo out in Vancouver seemingly every season, where he hits a stretch where he cannot stop anything. And they turn to their backup and they right the ship a little bit. Now, you know, and Luongo is one of the highest paid players in the league. And the deal that Howard is tentatively, you know, signing or you know, looking at would make him, I believe, the 10th highest paid goalie in the league. And I feel like there is nothing wrong with that. You know, I think he might be better than 10th in terms of, you know, just skill level and overall production. But I mean, being the 10th highest paid goalie, there's no shame in that for Howard. And I think it's a nice deal for the Red Wings because you get a top level goalie at, you know, maybe a little bit of a discounted rate. So, you know, no harm there. Looking forward to seeing him in the winged wheel for as long as possible. So, you know, hats off to Jimmy Howard. Congrats on your new tentative deal. And I hope they get that done. And, you know, dot the I's and cross the T's, you know, before we get too far into the weekend. So you look at that, and, you know, that's our look at the NHL. And I think now, you know, the last little segment here, I think it's time to talk movies. And I think the big sports movie this week, and, you know, recently, I don't think there's been many big sports movies. It's 42, Jackie Robinson's story. Now, I've seen the trailers, and I'm on the fence. Not obviously with the Jackie Robinson story, because I think it's a great story. I don't know if it looks like that good of a movie. I think maybe there's too much Harrison Ford in the trailer. And I was reading the USA Today, and I'm so glad that they gave him a wig, because I don't know if they could have afforded all that hair dye in their budget to change him to that dark-haired fellow, Branch Rickey. But, you know, it's obviously a great story, and, you know, the reviews that I have read say that it's a little heavy-handed, and, you know, that's kind of understandable, but at the same time, it is a little disappointing. But when you look at classic sports movies, you know, I will watch Remember the Titans till the end, no matter when I come into it. You know, if it's on TV and I catch, you know, 45 minutes in, I'll watch to the end. If I go in and, you know, Bertier's just got in his car accident, I'll watch till the end. I mean, there are certain movies that hook you, and certainly this has the potential. Obviously, it's probably the most popular story in you know, one of the most popular stories in baseball, and, you know, we'll see if they can honor Jackie's legacy, which, you know, hopefully is the main goal of this movie, and not just, you know, money as it normally is. But you know, it remains to be seen. I think I'm sure the public will love it, and, you know, I'm sure I'll see it, you know, and I'll probably enjoy it very much. But tentative, you know, these early reviews have me a little bit shaken. Now, Alex, are you going to see it, or have you already seen it? Because I know there were screenings last night.
Right. No, I have not seen it yet. I definitely do see your side of it on why it may turn you off a little bit. But again, you know, you're making the famous Jackie Robinson story into a modern day movie, which is very hard to do and be original. So,
right. I mean, it's a story that everyone has heard, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you are a baseball fan, I would hope that you know who Jackie Robinson is and the struggles he went through.
Yeah, and there are documentaries about Jackie Robinson. There are already media and films out there that depict what he went through. Now, making this into a drama, I'm not so sure if that's the correct approach.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to put it. You know, I just don't know if you do a story like this and you're able to honor it. I think it's certainly a tall task. And, you know, when you hire a star like a Harrison Ford, I think that kind of, I don't want to say it overshadows the story, but I feel like that's maybe one of the reasons that people will go see, you know, you're drawn to the star power of Harrison Ford as opposed to the story of Jackie Robinson.
It could be. And then, of course, you want it to be as true as possible. You want every detail of that story to be lively. Now, is it going to be the exact same story in terms of Jackie's eyes? Would it have been the same story in Jackie's eyes? Probably not.
Probably not.
Which makes it very hard to do it in a modern day era. I mean, you look at The Social Network. Is that the same as what Mark Zuckerberg basically entailed? No.
I don't think Mark Zuckerberg would say that. No, not at all. So yeah, you're right. I mean, it's great that they're making it. I hope they really do him justice, because it's going to be tough. And, you know, some of them say it's formulaic, and, you know, obviously you know what's coming going in, but you just hope that they do a good enough job that, you know, you kind of still get swept up in it, and, you know, it's still, you know, a moving picture, and you know, you get the sense of what he went through and the triumph of his legacy, I think, is the main thing. So let us know what you think. Are you excited for it? Do you think they're going to botch it? 517-355-9527 or toll free at 877-952-7870. And yeah, 42. And when you see the trailer and it's Jay-Z, and I know that Jay-Z has become, you know, just such a huge, you know, bigger than life celebrity, but the songs and the trailers just kind of seem like, I don't know if this is exactly what the angle that they should be playing. I think, you know, and when obviously a trailer is designed to get people into the theater, but I feel like when it's such an important subject like this, and you know, like the Jackie Robinson story, maybe it's a more subtle approach that you need to take. Maybe, you know, you turn down the blaring soundtrack during the, you know, this is a story that it's already, you know, dramatic enough and riveting enough on its own. You know, the real life story is already one of the great American stories in sports. So I feel like, you know, there's not a lot of drama that needs to be injected But that's going to be the big question is do they overdo it? Do they, you know, is it ham-fisted and heavy-handed in its execution? And I think that remains to be seen, and it'll be interesting to see. So, yeah, let us know what you think. 517-355-9527 or toll-free at 877-952-7870. And when you look at some of the stories here going on now, we have, you know, you look at the state of let's talk about MSU a little bit. We haven't talked about the Spartans at all today, and we still haven't heard anything in terms of their pro prospects. A couple more guys have declared for the draft. You know, no one really crazy, no one you wouldn't expect. And now Russ Smith, who had apparently declared according to his dad, now Rick Pitino has come out and said, you know, he's still thinking about it. And all the articles that are appearing in the papers are just kind of like, yeah, the coaches they're getting all the information they can because that deadline is approaching. I believe it's the 15th, so they don't have a lot of time. You know, tax day, it's coming along quick. So, you know, they've got to make their decisions, and it's the biggest decisions of their lives. Now, everyone apparently is saying that Harris is safe, a safe bet to stay. And I think, you know, more than anything, it's because of that shoulder injury that's kind of hampered his effectiveness and maybe his consistency a little bit, although he was incredibly consistent as a shooter. But still, you know, when you look at a guy like that, you want to see him at full strength for a number of games and not just constantly being hobbled by injuries. Because if you're, you know, constantly fighting these nagging injuries at the college game, I think it's going to be even more problematic at the next level when the competition is bigger and stronger and faster.
Yeah, and the other thing about it is with this whole declaration, if you're going out too early, if you've done enough at the college level, well, one underrated factor is that many of these college players improve mainly when they get to the pros, and even in basketball too. You debate whether it's the right time to come out early, whether maybe he should hone his skills more, but you look at Percy Harvin. Was he completely developed before he came to the NFL? No, but look how much he's learned at the NFL level because of a great wide receivers coach, because of the fact that he has a dominant running back and his ability, you know, to have a dominant effect in that passing offense. So I don't think it's out of the question.
No, definitely not, and that's a great point. And to your point, I think you've seen the NBA kind of place more of an emphasis on the NBDL, because you see a lot of teams, especially this season, they'll send guys down, you know, in the middle of the season to the NBDL so they can get some time on the court. Because, you know, the way that the NBA schedule is, you know, an 82 game season over, you know, just a few months, that's a lot of travel, you know, obviously a lot of games. You're not going to have tons of time to practice. And I think, you know, other sports have certainly done a good job of, you know, developing their players, and guys improve by leaps and bounds in the pros. And you know, the NBA is no exception. But, you know, until recently, I think that was the one where it was most hit or miss in terms of, you know, a prospect coming in. And if he's not in the right situation or getting enough playing time, he's not going to develop at that same rate. So now you see guys, you know, sending their younger players. You know, the Spurs do it constantly. They're constantly calling guys up and sending guys down to get playing time on the court. It looks like we have a caller here. Don, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, this is Bob. Yeah, I've been interested in this NBA draft discussion and kind of left things to the golf here recently. One of the things about Earl, he was always open to taking a call, and didn't matter whether it was a nonsense call or what. But anyway, as far as this draft, I've always questioned, hey, guy has a couple of good games and he's going to go pro. How many slots are there? I would think they have rosters. They can't use all of these players. No, you're just mentioning the developmental league.
Mm-hmm.
So first round, those guys get guaranteed job and money.
Right.
Okay. Then I know what happens to the other guys. I don't know much about the developmental league. I don't follow the pros. But I want you to really discuss, if you would, because I haven't been able to get this opportunity that the players had yesterday to submit to the NCAA, a request to review, or the NBA, I guess, you know, what are my chances? Then it takes them 5 days to get it back, And then it looks like the next day they have to make a choice which way they're going to go. That seems unreasonable. In one day they'd have to make a choice when they just got the material.
Right. And Bob, you make an excellent point. Thank you so much for your call. It has gotten, and it's recently gotten a lot quicker. They used to have a lot more time to decide, and now they don't. And I think one of the main reasons you see that is because coaches, you know, guys like let's say a John Calipari or a Roy Williams, they had so many top level recruits that they wanted to pursue, that they wanted to know whether or not they were going to keep those guys that were maybe in limbo. They wanted to know, you know, yes or no, are they staying or are they going, as soon as possible, so they can move their focus and their efforts towards getting those new guys. And I think, you know, with the one and done kind of culture in college basketball, I think it's only catering more to that style of thinking where guys just have no time to think. I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think it's like, it's insanely quick how much, you know, this is the biggest decision of these young men's lives, you know, whether or not they go to the pros or stay another year. And to rush them like that, just so a multi-million dollar coach has more time to recruit another replacement for that player, it seems, you know, I understand that they're trying to protect the institutions, but I feel like the NCAA first and foremost should be about protecting the students and the student athletes. And when you look at the way things are now, I don't know if it does that.
If they just move this thing up sooner, give them their evaluation, give them, say, 5 days to make a decision.
Right. You know, one day, that's, I mean, I'll flip-flop on anything in a day. I mean, if, let alone my career and, you know, my future. So I agree. I think at the very least, you know, give them a week, you know. This is the biggest decision of their lives.
So what they do is they pass on this decision then, so they don't have until the 28th, whatever it is. They don't bother with it, so the thing isn't really being very effective.
Right. I mean, as long, you know, they still have a chance, you know, as long as they're not signing an agent or anything, they can probably still come back. But it just seems, it does seem rushed. And it seems like it's just too quick of a process for the importance that these decisions have on both the schools and the players themselves. So I think you make an excellent point.
Even if, you know, rushed is one thing, but unreasonable. And I can see the them not wanting to have every player just throw his hat out there just to see what they think of me. So to kind of, you know, keep that down. But one day, I just thought maybe I misunderstood. That seemed unreasonable. Expect anybody to make a decision in one day.
Right, let alone, you know, a 19, 20-year-old.
Yeah.
I mean, exactly. And especially when there's potentially millions of dollars to be made or lost.
I wonder how many players have taken advantage, if you call it that, this opportunity to get an evaluation.
You know, I'm not sure. I know it's been reported that, you know, Appling, Harris, and Payne have all asked for information. I believe it's the Draft Advisory Board. Yeah. I think that's the official title. But, you know, and they're waiting, and, you know, Izzo's doing all he can to get him as much information as possible. But I think you're right. I think it is a little unreasonable.
So your understanding is they have taken an opportunity to disadvantage, so that means when they get this back, they got one day?
Well, I know that they're at least getting the information. I think, yeah, I believe it is one day. I'm not 100% sure, but I know, I'm sure that they've already been getting, you know, trickle-down information from various sources as, you know, since the season ended.
Oh, sure.
Right, but yeah, the deadline is fast approaching, and you know, they definitely have some decisions to make.
Yeah, they do, and I agree with you in closing that Harris, yeah, with that shoulder situation, I just don't think that it's good for him to make a move right now.
Right, I think it makes more sense to maybe have a whole year of being healthy, because, you know, if we see him healthy for a whole year, he has a good shot to win Big Ten Player of the Year.
His stock and value will go up.
Yeah, exactly. Up and up and up. Yeah, Bob, thank you so much for your call. It looks like that wraps up our show. That was a nice little ending there. It's been a great week, another great week in the books. So be sure to tune in Monday, 105, of course, for more sports talk here on WKR AM 870. I am Matt Ludke, Alex Shark in the booth, signing off for the week. You guys have a pleasant evening, a pleasant weekend, and we'll see you Monday here. WKAR East Lansing, AM 870.
This is Sports Talk from AM 870 WKAR.